Hey guys, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Thanks a lot for taking the time to check this out. Got a bunch of stuff on tap for you today, so let's get to it. First up, I got my training tip. In this training tip, I'm going to talk about my advice for how to alter your training basically during the riding season so that you can continue to train and also be able to ride hard and minimize your fitness loss while, you know, not having to interfere with your riding and just get through the season in good shape. And also give you some advice on how to modify your training if you're trying to peak for a race or a specific ride during the season. So some really good timely advice there for you guys. In my gear review, I talk about 510s, specifically what shoes I run. I get questions from time to time on, you know, they have a couple different shoes to choose from. So I just want to talk about the ones that I personally ride and why I like to ride them, and also give you some advice on getting started with them, because I know that finding these shoes isn't as easy as it should be. Not every local bike shop carries them. So if you don't have someone local to you that carries them, I also give you my little insider secret on where to find them so that you can get them quickly and kind of risk-free. If they don't work out for you, you can return them. And then finally, I've got an interview with Leah, who is the co-founder for singletracks.com. And every once in a while, I come across a website and I really like what they're doing. I think they're doing a great thing for the mountain biking community. And so I wanted to share with you what it is that they're doing over there at Singletracks so that you guys, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, you guys can take advantage of the great resources that they have there and the other stuff. And so you can find out more about that in my little interview I have with her. So that's going to be it. So let's get to it. All right, guys, for this podcast training tip, what I want to do is talk about some in-season riding advice. So for a lot of us, it's starting to get longer days and, you know, the trails are thawing out. So it's time to get out there and start putting all of our fitness and stuff to use. And so, but one of two things usually happens during this time of year. Riders will do one of two things. They'll either usually stop training altogether. And the common thought process with this is that, well, you know, now that I'm riding more, I don't need to train as much. Like riding is going to, you know, keep me fit. And so especially for the legs, you know, that'll be another thing. If riders do continue to do some training, a lot of times it'll be some, you know, some upper body and core stuff and figure that riding is enough for the legs, which unfortunately is not necessarily true. So, but this is actually going to lead to a loss in strength and power. And, you know, this all kind of hinges on my high tension cardio concept, where it's not so much what your energy system, whether you're aerobic or anaerobic, as much as what type of effort is your energy system responding to. Is it a high tension or a rhythmic effort? And so since we've established that mountain biking has a higher tension element than road riding does, and there is a significant high tension element to mountain biking. And so since strength and power are kind of the basis for that high tension cardio ability, then as you lose strength and power, you're going to lose your ability to as efficiently produce tension as you could before, which means that you're not going to be as effective with it, which means that it's going to take more cardio in order for you to continue to produce the same amount of tension over the course of a ride. And so, as long story short, as that strength and power base starts to erode, you're going to find that your fitness starts to fade. And this is, you know, what happens with most riders is they end up starting out the season in decent shape, you know, they ride themselves in a better shape. They end up kind of, you know, peaking out towards the middle of the year and then kind of limping across the finish line. And you know, riders that do this will tend to, you know, find that their fitness really starts to fade at the end of the season. And that's due to that eroding strength base. And they'll also find that they don't really make as much progress from year to year, because when you let your strength base erode so much, when you go into the off season, you spend a lot of time just simply trying to make up for the strength base that you let go. And so you don't actually get a chance to build on top of your fitness from year to year. You end up just kind of reloading during the off season, and then it fades away. So hopefully you're starting to get the idea that that's not good. You do need to train. You need to do something during riding. But on the opposite end of the spectrum is the riders who just keep plowing ahead with the same amount of training and the same intensity. And, you know, this just comes from the need to always be working hard, but this is going to lead to overtraining and injuries in the long run. You only have so much, you know, fuel in the tank. And when you start riding more, you're going to have to use less of it for strength training. I know it's, you know, coming from the strength training guy, I'm actually telling you that you need to strength train less and ride more during the season, but that's the case. I mean, that's the reality of it. So, you know, when you weren't riding that much, you can get in 3 to 4 days a week of a good hard workout program, but that's not going to work as effectively when you start riding more and the hours that you're out on the trail can like double or triple within a few weeks, like once the riding season hits. So again, you have to make some adjustments with that. So, you know, so it's not really that complicated. I think a lot of times, and again, I'm talking to my average mountain biker out there. Again, if you're like this high, high level pro rider, then some of this stuff is obviously a little different. But, you know, I just got to be totally honest with you. The person that I'm talking to, the person that I'm riding for, is your average mountain biker. You know, we're not getting paid to ride our mountain bikes, and a lot of us have jobs and stuff like that that we have to do. And mountain biking may be an obsession, but there still has to be, you know, room and energy for other things in our life. And so when that's the case, there's some pretty simple rules that you can look at that'll help you determine how to handle your training when the riding season hits. And I'm going to talk about here in a second how to make some modifications for race day and when you're trying to quote unquote peak for a race or something like that. But this is just kind of in general how I look at things. And it really breaks down to how many hours per week you're riding. And so if you're riding less than 4 hours a week, then odds are you're not really riding enough to, you know, impact your recovery ability enough to need to cut back a lot on your training. So you can probably continue with, you know, 2 to 3 days of hard training per week with if you're riding less than 4 hours a week. If you're riding 4 to 8 hours a week, then you're going to want to cut back some. This is kind of, you know, you want to continue to train hard because you're not really riding enough to where you need to cut back a lot, but you definitely need to make some modifications. So in this case, what I suggest is that you train 2 days a week. You get 2 days of hard training per week, but this is also where several shorter workouts throughout the week will help keep you strong and powerful. And so instead of just working out 2 days a week and then doing nothing on the other days, what I would suggest doing, what I have my riders doing and the people who are using my program and on my Inner Circle website, what I suggest doing with them is 2 days a week of hard training and then using my 15-minute trail rider tune-ups. I've had a couple of them posted at Pink Bike and you know a couple of them at my blog at bikejames.com. You can find some there. But these are just basic little 15-minute, you know, movement. There's some mobility and some core and some basic strength, and it's very quick, but it's just, you know, get some good quality movement in there, some mobility and core work and things like that. So some short daily workouts are the ticket for this, because that way you're not really working out long enough to tear yourself down significantly in any one workout, but you're moving and you're able to continue to practice, you know, quality, strong movement, which will help fight that fade. So again, 2 days of hard training with, personally, I like to get one of those little mini workouts in almost every day. I mean, I do them on the weekends as well. So I'm at least doing something, you know, 5 to 6 days a week, be it training or a little mini workout. And then lastly, when you're riding like 9 or 10 hours or more per week, then that's when you do need to make some significant changes to your program. You still need to train hard, and I'll explain why that is in just here in a second. But what you need to do is cut back to like one hard day per week, one moderate day, and then fill in again with those mini workouts on the other days. And so that's the key to logging a lot of miles on the trail with a minimal loss in your base fitness. And so remember, what mountain biking does is it takes our base fitness and turns it into specialized fitness, which is specialized for mountain biking. But the problem with specialized fitness is that there are some components of base fitness that it needs that don't get trained enough to be maintained. And so that's why just riding isn't going to do it for you. You know, you're going to lose some of that base strength and power and high tension cardio, and that's going to affect your specialized fitness on your bike eventually. So you do need to continue to train and do some things, even if you're riding, you know, 9, 10 plus hours a week. So that would be my suggestion there. And then, you know, the next question is, well, what is hard? You know, what is moderate? You know, that is kind of an individual thing. I mean, you got to listen to your body. What's a hard workout on a day that you're feeling fresh is not necessarily a hard workout on a day that you're feeling a little run down. So it has more to do with kind of your how hard you're going to push yourself. I would say that a hard workout is one where, you know, you are going to, you know, push yourself within a rep or two of failure with your exercises. A moderate workout would be where when things start to feel hard, that's when you cut back. And so, you know, you'd probably, you know, leave like 3 or 4 reps in the tank. So, you know, you don't always have to be training hard in order to see results. So anyways, so that's kind of my basic suggestions. It breaks down to how many hours per week you're riding and then what to do based on that. And so that'll let you do that. Now, how to adjust training for races. And, you know, one of the things when I went to Mike Boyle's, his mentorship program, one of the main things I wanted to ask him was, how do you handle, you know, training, in-season training and quote-unquote peaking for athletes that have an insanely long season? And Mike Boyle is a hockey, works with hockey players. And so they have the same thing that mountain bikers do, where there is a long, you know, season where you're continually riding and racing, and there's not really a chance to peak. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people forget, like, peaking, it's not that it doesn't work, but it doesn't work very well in sports that don't have like a very specific date that you're peaking for. So for example, in track and field, which is probably like the best sport that peaking will work for, that people think about like the Olympics, you know, and stuff like that. We got to peak for this, you know, for the Olympics or whatever the case may be. But the thing is leading up to and that race and things like that, there are other races that aren't as important. And so they don't have to perform at a high level at every race. And so there's some throwaway races that they go to. For most mountain bikers, we don't have that luxury. We don't really have, you know, if you're racing in a local series, you don't have a throwaway race. You can't say like, okay, I'm going to crush it on this date, which means that I can, you know, let these other races kind of go to crap a little bit because I just understand that I'm peaking for this date. So anyways, long story short, the longer your season is, the harder it is to necessarily peak for any particular date. And so for most mountain bikers, it's an impracticality. So what you want to do, and this was what Mike Boyle told me, was for that type of athlete, for, you know, what we're doing, your goal is to simply maintain strength and power as much as possible. And you just kind of vary the workload if there's a more important, you know, race or ride coming up, but you're not necessarily looking to quote unquote peak for anything. And so that's the idea with the riding season, is to just try to maintain strength and power as best you can, and then modify training here and there to help you be a little more fresh for specific races or rides or something like that. So that's the idea. It's, you know, it's science, but it's not rocket science. And, you know, again, sometimes people try to make this stuff out to be way more complicated than it is. But so here's how I suggest that you handle that, how to adjust training for racing. If it's a race you're not trying to peak for, then just train as normal. And I would suggest making your last training session on Thursday and then doing a mini workout on Friday and Saturday. So basically, you know, that's a racing, if you're assuming you race on Sunday. You know, if you race on Saturday, you got to back that up. But basically, long story short, you want to have your last hard workout be 3 days prior to your race. So if you race on Saturday, then you want your last hard workout to be on Wednesday, and then you're going to spend Thursday and Friday doing some mini workouts, some mobility, you know, going on, you know, basically making sure that you're prepared for the race. You don't want to stop doing everything. Your body actually hates too little movement as much as it hates too much movement. So you got to walk that fine line there when you're trying to back off in order to be fresh. So it's pretty simple there. I mean, that's just not a real tough deal there. If it's an important race that you want to be a little fresher for, you know, quote unquote peak for, then you want to make some adjustments to the week prior and leading into the race. And now these are usually races when, you know, a rider wants to feel fresh and ready to go with no residual soreness or fatigue from training. And so you basically don't want to train real hard during the week leading up to the race. You don't want to leave out all training, you know, or else you're going to be operating at less than peak efficiency when the race finally comes around. But you do want to cut back some. So, I mean, basically you would train as normal the week before the race, and then the week leading up to the race, you would have, I would say, like one hard training session or moderate training session earlier in the week, like Monday or Tuesday, and then use those mini workouts that I talked about earlier just to kind of keep the movement going. And so again, it's understanding the mindset. You have to have a mindset shift with what is training. Training doesn't mean the same things at all times during the year. And so during the season and at specific times during the season when you're trying to be a little fresher or quote-unquote peak for a race, then the idea with training is to maintain movement quality and body awareness and just movement efficiency. And training when you are in the off season, or if you're in a period during your season when you're not riding as much and you're able to hit the gym more, but basically, you know, training at that point will be more about improvement and breaking yourself down so that you can build yourself up better and trying to make improvements with training. So what are you trying to do with training? Are we trying to maintain or are we trying to improve? And so just understanding what you're trying to accomplish will really help with that. So anyway, hopefully you guys have found this to be informative. I know that I've just been getting a ton of questions, email and on the form at my Inner Circle website about this. And so I just figured that this was a good subject that would benefit a lot of riders out there. So hopefully you guys have found some good information here on how to modify your training during the riding season and also make some modifications if you want to be a little fresher for a specific race or ride throughout the season. And as always, if you got any questions on this, feel free to post them at my blog at bikejames.com. Under this podcast here and post it in the comment section. I'll get to it as soon as I can. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this training tip and I will talk to you in the next one. Hey guys, for this podcast gear review, what I want to do is go over some basics about 510s and getting set up with them for riding flat pedals. And one of the big things that I tell people when you are making the switch to flat pedals is to invest in a pair of 510s. And 510s, what makes them special, what makes them better than pretty much any other shoe on the market for riding your mountain bike, is the use of their sticky rubber sole. Now, for those of you that don't know, real quick history lesson here, 510 is a mountain climbing shoe company. And so the rubber on their soles is actually developed for their climbing and approach shoes. And what happened was several years ago, Intense actually, I think, was the first company to do it, contacted them. I don't know how it came about, but Intense basically branded 510 shoes. So you had these Intense riding shoes, Intense bikes, mountain bikes, riding shoes, but they were basically 510s with the Intense branding on them. And so that was the introduction of the sticky rubber to the mountain biking shoe community. And I can still remember at the time, you know, riding my skate shoes thinking, oh, it's not that big of a deal, you know, sticky rubber soles, how big could it be? And at the time, I just happened to be working at a bike shop. And if there's one thing that you probably know about bike shop guys is that they buy way too much crap. And we always have to have everything that just came out. And so anyways, eventually I just bought them because they were new and I wanted to check them out. And let me tell you, man, that was I still remember that first ride on those things and just being blown away by how much better they were than anything else I had tried and how much more confident I was on my bike and my feet didn't slip around. It was awesome. So for those of you that still kind of cling to the my feet slip around on my pedals idea when it comes to clipless pedals, just know that with 510s, that's not the case. And so that's why I highly, highly, highly recommend getting the 510 shoes. In fact, I don't think you can actually make a fair judgment on modern riding flats on a modern mountain bike unless you have tried the 510 sticky rubber shoes with a good pair of flat pedals. You know, again, if you tried flats, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, it's not the same game today. So again, the 510s were a game changer with that. And so here's some basic advice. I get some questions from people from time to time about, you know, what are my recommendations? What do I ride? You know, what do I recommend as far as shoes go? And I will tell you that, you know, the two shoes that I personally wear are the Impacts, the Impact 2s, and they make several versions of that from a low top to a mid top to a high top. So if you want some ankle protection with that, you can. The Impacts are really good for aggressive trail riding, or if you ride in areas that have a lot of rocks and you need to protect your toes. They basically, the sole is a little stiffer than in the other 510s, and which is good for if you have to, you know, put a foot out if you, you know, are crashing, and, you know, provides a little cushion for your heel, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And they also, you know, they are made out of a tougher material that the toes are protected. And so, you know, for full on downhilling, aggressive trail riding, or if you ride in an area where you feel like your toes are a little exposed, like we are here in the Grand Junction area, I mean, the Lunch Loop trails are just, rocks everywhere, man, and right about toe level. So you got to watch that. But so those are the shoes that I mainly ride. But I also will wear the 510 Free Riders, and the Free Riders are a little more like a casual shoe. They're not as overbuilt. They look kind of more like a traditional skate shoe, and I like them for when I'm going on a more casual trail ride. You know, personally, they're great for just, you know, kind of wearing around town and being able to, you know, jump on your bike, and, you know, great for dirt jumping, you know, those kind of applications. So those are the two main shoes that I ride, are the Impacts and the Free Riders. And so I know that they have some others out there, you know, the Carver W for women is great. You know, I know a lot of women have trouble finding shoes that will fit them, and especially with looking in the 510s. And so you know, the Carver W is a women specific one, and I'm not really sure exactly what the difference between the Carvers are and all that other stuff. So if you know, feel free to, you know, post it on this on my blog with this podcast if you have any more information on that. But so that's basically what I use and what I recommend. Now, as far as like getting set up with some shoes, here's what I recommend. First and foremost, always support your local bike shop. You know, check with your local bike shop, see if they have a pair. If they don't, see if they'll help you out and order a pair. Ask them what their return policy is. Obviously, you know, if they're going to be like, well, once we order them, they're yours, even if they don't fit you or something like that. I mean, you know, that shouldn't be your bike shop anyways. But anyways, so always try to support your local bike shop, you know. And if you can't do that, though, if your local bike shop doesn't carry them, which you'll be surprised. I mean, you will be shocked. Go out and look for all you people who are like, oh, you know, clipless pedals aren't pushed on the mountain biking community, blah, blah, blah. Go check out your local bike shop and check out what kind of shoes they carry. And I'll guarantee you, I'll be shocked if you actually have a bike shop in your town that carries 510s. And if you do, give that dude a high five because he's ahead of the curve. But here locally in Grand Junction, where there are 6 bike shops, only one carries 510s. And I get emails from people all the time saying that they cannot find 510s locally, and their local bike shop will not help them out. So anyways, if you cannot find a place that will help you out and order them locally, then Zappos.com is the ticket. And I'm sitting here looking at it right now. If you go to Zappos.com and do a search for 510, you will come across their selection. It's got the climbing shoes mixed in with the riding shoes. So if you do a search for 510 Impacts or 510 Free Riders, then they'll narrow it down a little bit for you there. But here's the deal that I like with Zappos. One is they're just a great company, and they have great customer service, and they take care of their people. Two, they got a 365-day return policy. So you can order these shoes. In fact, you know, if you're not sure what size you're going to wear, you can order a couple sizes and return the ones that didn't fit you. They have no problem with that. I've actually called and talked to them and asked them about this because I just wanted to make sure before I put this advice out there to mountain bikers. The other thing is, is you can try them, and if they don't work, you can return them. So, you know, if you buy the shoes, if you get a pair of flat pedals, you get a pair of 510s, you give it a good 2 to 4 weeks of riding and trying it, and you're just like, ah, man, this is just terrible. I hate this. I'm not having as much fun, blah, 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 because that's what it's all about. It's having fun on the trail, and you want to go back to the clipless pedals. I mean, that's fine, but you can return them. And I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, this is one of the things that a local bike shop can't do. But you know, with Zappos, if you have any doubt in your mind as to whether or not this is going to work for you or not, then order them from Zappos so that if it doesn't work, you can return them and get rid of that excuse that, you know, I don't want to spend all that money on these shoes if they're not going to work out for me. So go ahead and feel free to, you know, try them with no risk whatsoever. They're either going to work out great or they won't, and you can return them and no problem there. So there's your little secret weapon, Zappos.com. If you can't find somebody locally to help you out, the Impact 2s and the Free Riders are what I wear. There's some other ones out there. Unfortunately, you know, I'm just going to throw this out there. They recently started also coming out with clipless pedal compatible shoes. And I'm not extremely, you know, I always kind of felt like they were the champion of the flat pedal posse. But apparently there is enough money in clipless pedal interfaces to warrant going into it. Either that or the big name guy that they signed who needed his own signature shoe who happens to run clipless pedals. It just became more important about signing that guy than necessarily sticking with their core offering. So I don't know. I don't sit on the board of 510 and I'm not privy to that stuff. But I will tell you, I was a little disappointed when they started carrying clipless. I thought that was one of the things that really separated them in the mountain biking industry and made them not so much of a me too kind of company. So they lost out a little bit there when they did that. But anyways, that's just me kind of rambling and giving my own personal opinion on the subject, which so anyways, hopefully you guys have gotten some good information from this. You know, if you have already running flats, you know, this is good to know in case you are talking to a friend and they're interested in running them too, knowing, you know, what advice to give them to get them set up. And so just remember, you know, the confused mind says no. So if when we're giving people advice, the more specific we can be with the advice, the more likely they will be to take it. Whereas if we just kind of leave it ambiguous and don't give them some specifics, sometimes they may mean to check it out, but they just never do. So so that's it. Some advice for you guys on buying shoes and the 510 specifically and getting set up with them. Hope you guys have enjoyed this gear tip, and I'll talk to you in the next one. All right, everybody. Every once in a while when I'm surfing around the web, I come across a website that I want to share with you guys, and not a whole lot of sites out there that I feel are worth mentioning, but singletracks.com is one of the sites that I come across recently, and I really like what they have going on there. And I have the co-founder, Leah, on the phone with me today. Leah, how's it going?
Hey, James, I'm good. It's always nice to talk with another mountain biker.
Heck yeah. So, you know, we had a chance to chat a little bit before we started the interview here, and so we were talking about some of the things that make Singletrax, you know, a really cool site, and something I think that, you know, my podcast listeners should definitely check out. But before we do that, why don't you tell us a little about what your story is, you know, kind of how'd you get into mountain biking, you know, how did that lead you to, you know, running and, or, you know, co-founding and running this site, and just give us a little background on it.
Sure. Well, I started mountain biking in college. This was probably in the late 90s, and you know, I had been fortunate enough to ride kind of a lot of really good trails all over the Southeast, being in Atlanta and North Carolina and South Carolina, and then soon after college we moved to Colorado and lived in California, so I was able to ride in a lot of really, really cool places, and I wanted to be able to, you know, share those experiences with people. And so since I was in college, I just everyone was starting to build websites, right? And I wanted to learn that too. And I remember building Singletrax in Notepad. I don't know if you even use that program anymore because we have so many different software applications on the computers now. But I built the site in Notepad in HTML, plain HTML, before all this crazy programming languages were even out there that I knew of. And so that's kind of where it all started. I just wanted to share my experiences of places that I've ridden and You know, I kind of threw up some of the trails that I'd been to with directions and some photos, some funny photos of me crashing and my injuries and things like that. You know, stuff that was pretty fun. And, you know, later on in life, we just started growing the site because we started allowing more and more members or users to add trails and add photos and add all these other places that I'd never even, you know, dreamed of mountain biking, saw those popping up on the site. And, you know, since it started growing about 5 or 6 years ago, my husband, Jeff, and I had put more time and more investment into single tracks to grow it into the site that you see today. And, you know, right now we probably have over 3,500 trails cataloged around the United States and around the country. So hopefully there's a trail near you or somewhere you want to go, you can find it on single track.
Nice. Excellent. Well, it's always nice to find someone else who's able to turn their passion for mountain biking into, you know, into something that helps them get through life and pay the bills here and there. So, but one of the, you started talking about it there in your introduction of how you got into this and how single tracks got started, but the trail maps and, like, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, those really stand out to me as being just a great resource for mountain bikers. And one of the main reasons I wanted to let people know about you guys and you know, definitely need to go check out your site is because of the quality and quantity of the maps that you have. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about, you know, the trail maps that you guys have and what makes them, you know, different.
Thanks, James. Yeah, we really are very proud of the trail maps because we definitely put a lot of work into making them. And actually, most of the trail maps that you see are submitted from users, from mountain bikers all around the country that send us GPS data, and we take that GPS data, massage it a little bit, and smooth it out and lay it over a topo map to give you really detailed information about the trail. And you can have that printed version of the trail map to take along with you in your hydration pack, or if you're savvy enough to use a GPS while you're riding, you can take that GPS data and upload it right to your GPS and have it on the trail with you. You know, it's nice to have a map wherever you're going. If you're going to a new trail, it's great to have one and to know where maybe there's some, well, maybe where there's a nice lookout point or where there's going to be a turn, a crazy turn coming up, and you want to go the preferred way, the better way, the downhill is what I'm talking about, that way around. And so we like to be able to provide those maps to people that are unsure or just want to have a little bit more information about the trails when they go out. And those maps, actually, they're really only available to subscribers to our site, and those are people that will sign up for maybe a one-year membership, and you'll get access to about 1,000, actually a little more than 1,100 now, trails all around the world. You can take those maps with you and get a lot of other trail information too.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, that's just, one of the things that really stood out to me is as far as what you guys got going on there, but that's not all that you have. You guys also have, a really great forum. And again, like we were talking about earlier, you know, forums are one of those things. They can be great, and that they can also be, not so great. And so you guys have a really good forum going on. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys have going on there and how you kind of, keep a good community going on with it.
Yeah, I know what you mean there, James. Sometimes you go into a forum or into a place and you kind of know that you're not really among people that are like you, or you might feel not as smart about your bike, because you ask stupid questions. But I've had that happen to me too, and that's something that we don't want to have on single tracks. You know, we have a lot of great moderators and a lot of great people that are very knowledgeable about the sport and really helpful to keep conversations around mountain biking, but also to keep some entertainment value in there too, right? I don't want to just kind of go into a a forum and get a quick answer to my question. I appreciate that people are willing to extend a welcome and extend to friendship and ask more about other people than just what are you here for, what do you want to know. And so we have definitely a lot of great people in the mountain biking community that are willing to share their information and their expertise in mountain biking, and it's great because, you know, you could spend all day on the forums having conversations with people across the country and, build good friendships out of it. And that's what I love to see, just people connecting through the forums and coming back to Single Tracks because they know that they can get good information from the people there or get good information about trails or peer reviews or whatever it is that you're looking for related to mountain biking.
Nice. Yeah. You guys got, good gear reviews and, stuff like that going on as well. So definitely something for everyone. So what kind of rider would you say that you're trying to appeal to? Like, you guys have a really good culture going on over at Single Track. So what kind of rider do you think would benefit the most from that?
Offer a little something for everyone, right? But I think mostly it's that trail rider, that XC rider that is looking for trails in their backyard and then beyond their backyard that may be willing to travel to find some new challenges or some new scenery. And so we find a lot of those people gravitating to our site. But really who would benefit the most from it, I think we touched a little bit on it before, are people that are willing to contribute to the community. If you had found a trail on Single Tracks that you liked, it'd be awesome for you to come back and share your review about it, give it a 5 stars or give it a 1 star and let people know that maybe this trail needs a little work. And it'd be great for you to share your photos about the trail or even if you have GPS data on the trail, we'd love to add that to our trail catalog and really help other people get this mountain biking information and enjoy the trails as much as you do.
Nice. Excellent. So basically people who are looking to be a part of a really great mountain biking community would benefit from checking out your site. Is that
absolutely.
Nice. Excellent. So, awesome. I really appreciate the time so far, and it's been some great information, but I wanted to end with you are going to offer a special deal for my podcast listeners and my blog readers through the end of the month. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your guys' pro membership, what it includes, and what the deal is.
Yeah, of course, because we are so supportive of James, your philosophy of training, and we want to also get people out there to enjoy their ride just as much as you do. We want to offer the pro membership deal on Single Tracks to your users for $5 off the current rate. And our membership price is normally $30 a year, $29.99 actually per year. And so we'll offer your members $5 off, now through the end of the month through April 30th. So I believe we can set up a code for you. I think it's James, pretty simple, J-A-M-E-S, and you just will have to hit singletracks.com up and enter that coupon code, and you'll get the special price, and you'll have access to all the trail maps that I had mentioned, plus you'll have access to a training application where you can upload some of your workout information, whether it's mountain biking or not. You'll get obviously all the directions and photos, access to photos and reviews of all the other trails on the website. So hope you enjoy it.
Yeah, and just to add something to that, I'm actually going to be contributing some stuff to the training section at Single Tracks at the pro membership as well. And so that's something, getting some stuff from me will be included as part of that as well. So I just wanted to throw that in there that I'm actually starting to help support that membership there with some of my stuff. So good, yeah. And just for full disclosure, I don't get anything off of this referral. I really like what they're doing over at Singletrax, and so Leah was nice enough to offer this discount. And so yeah, you guys definitely need to go over and check out the site at singletrax.com, and if you like what they got going on, then check out the pro membership. It's $25 for a year. I mean, come on now, that's pretty reasonable for the amount of quality stuff and information you're going to have access to. So so right on, Leah, anything else that you want to end with?
No, I think that's all. I'm really excited about working with you, Bike James, in the future, and getting some of the training application information over to the Singletrax users too. I know they'll be super stoked to get some real good tidbits on what they can do to help improve their mountain biking skills, and I'm sure I can benefit from looking at your programs myself. I know I need to.
Well, right on. Well, yeah, I'll definitely be sending you some stuff over then. So, well, right on, Leah. Well, appreciate you taking the time to share this information with us. And, so you guys go over and check it out at singletrax.com. Hope you guys have enjoyed this interview, and I'll talk to you in the next podcast.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right, everybody. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. Certainly enjoyed putting it together for you guys. Again, I want to say thanks for taking the time to check this out. I really appreciate that you guys, take the time out of your busy day to listen to these podcasts, that you guys value the advice. I get the emails from people, let me know how much that this has helped them and the advice has helped them ride better. And that's why I do it. And that's why I keep putting this stuff out there. And I want to have like one of the best, resources for training and riding information in the world with my bikejames.com website and these podcasts and the videos and stuff that I do. So again, I really appreciate you guys taking the time to check this out and help me spread the word on this. So again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems. You can check me out on the web at bikejames.com. If you have any questions or comments on anything you heard on this podcast, and pop on over there and leave them there, and I'll get back to them as soon as I can. So hope you guys have enjoyed this podcast, and I will talk to you next time.